World Soccer Talk Radio here with you on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. My name is Nate Abarea. Thank you so much for making this show a part of your daily plans. It's a fresh week. Thanks for subscribing to us on iTunes, TuneIn, and Stitcher and iHeartRadio. Check out the website that started it all, worldsoccertalk.com, and get involved in that wild thing known as the Twitter sphere at World Soccer Talk to get a hold of all of us with all of your soccer-inclined Twitter gold at Sports Byline USA to get updates on the show. And if you want to send me all of that love mail or the hate mail that you're far too good at sending, at Nate WST. I want it all at Nate WST. So my footballing weekend went from London to Mexico City to the Bronx. Oh, it was so much fun. Didn't end too well, though. That final stop in the Bronx was not all that fortuitous. It started off in London watching Chelsea and Arsenal. What are we calling Diego Costa at this point? A jerk, a bully, a wind-up merchant, a douchebag, a big piece of sandpaper? I'm going to go with winner. That's all we're calling Diego Costa. He's a winner. He does whatever it takes. He's an absolute animal. He is a horrible, horrible human being. He's also a winner. Okay, so then, after I watched Chelsea defeat Arsenal 2-0, Arsenal ending that game with 9 men, watched a few other Premier League encounters as well, and then the afternoon, oh, it was so great. Went to one of my favorite childhood Mexican taquerias, had a couple of chavelas, oh, with the good shrimp in the top of the glass and everything, and watched Pumas take on Cruz Azul. We've had all these Mexican soccer analysts on this show getting back in touch with Liga MX. Oh, it's so good. Pumas and Cruz Azul. I saw Chaco Jimenez score a goal. How is he still a thing? How is he still alive? Chaco Jimenez, still doing it for La Máquina. And then I ended my Saturday football extravaganza by watching my beloved San Jose Earthquakes take on NYCFC in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium, where NYCFC went up 3-0. 2 goals from Ned Grabovoy. What was it, 2004? And then David Villa scores one, and then the Quakes, with Quincy Ameriquo and Chris Wondolowski, come back and make it 3-2. They could not pull off the epic comeback, but what a second half in the Bronx between NYCFC and the San Jose Earthquakes. Tweet me at NateWST. Let me know what your footballing weekend was like. Where did you travel to in your own mind? We've got a special treat for you on the other side of the break. Ian Plenderleith, the author of Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the NASL, is with us. Stay tuned. We're back after this. World Soccer Talk Radio.
See the world's best matches live, wherever you are, with Fox Soccer To Go. Watch select live matches on your smartphone, on your tablet, and on your computer. Get the app, get the games, and get your fix. Live soccer and more. Anytime, anywhere.
Sign up to watch the Bundesliga and Champions League at soccerondish.com.
Your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, but you don't have to wait until Week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Got an injured player? No problem. It's like a new season every week, so you're never stuck with the same players. And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. You could turn your love of football into a life-changing payday. Just pick your players, pile up the points, and pick up your cash. That's it. You've never experienced football like this before. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code ATTACK to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter ATTACK for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
If you're a soccer fan and you want to cut the cord and watch more of the beautiful game, NGSN may be the online streaming service you're looking for. FreeSoccerTrial.com. With NGSN, you get live, legal, and on-demand access to matches from the Eredivisie, J-League from Japan, K-League from Korea, Argentina's Primera Division, Portugal, Ecuador, Russian Premier League, as well as leagues from Bolivia, Venezuela, and more. The games are in HD, and commentaries are available in your choice of English or Spanish. And this is a completely new and legal way to watch soccer games in the US. Try it, and I think you'll be impressed. All you have to do is go to freesoccertrial.com and sign up today for your free 30-day trial to NGSN. Again, that's freesoccertrial.com. Freesoccertrial.com. Cheers.
Tonight on NBC, their voice returns with the Blind Auditions.
All right, I just want to say that watching Blake and Adam battle over artists is easily one of the most entertaining things on television.
I know, that's your favorite thing. Then it's the premiere of Blind Spot.
Wait. You got to hear what the critics are saying.
Okay.
Blindspot is the smartest new show on television and is poised to become the next Blacklist.
Ooh.
Translation, sit down and I'll watch this show.
It looks amazing. Blindspot premieres after the Blind Auditions on an all-new voice tonight.
On NBC. I mean, come on. Where else would it be?
Nate Abarea back here with you on World Soccer Talk Radio. It is a pleasure to welcome in the author of Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League, Mr. Ian Plenderleith. Ian, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show, Nate.
Absolutely. So talking to us from Frankfurt, Germany, correct?
Yes, that's right.
Well, how about that? So, a man who wrote a book about the North American Soccer League. You've spent a lot of time in England, and now we're talking to you in Deutschland, truly an international writer in all the best of ways. But let's talk all about the North American Soccer League. Let's talk about rock and roll soccer. I got the copy of this book, and to say that I loved it would be an understatement. It was one of those books where it truly felt like I was placed in the 1970s with the firsthand stories within this book. I felt like I was there. I felt like I was in the limousine drinking tequila with Pele in that story that Rodney Marsh tells in the first couple of pages. I felt like I was there in the stadiums. Talk about that a little bit in terms of your overall goals with creating this book. Was that something that was on your mind, really placing people in the time and places of the rock and roll soccer era?
Well, I think when I first started writing the book, I was really keen to upplay the rock and roll aspect of it, because the North American Soccer League had a huge reputation as the party league, the league where the glamorous players came, not really necessarily to play soccer, but to drink a lot and party a lot and generally end their careers on a high note in more ways than one. But the more that I looked into the game at that time, and the more that I researched it, I realized that was almost a complete fallacy. There certainly was a lot of that going on, and none of the players would deny that was one aspect of the league in the 70s. But in fact, I realized after talking to a lot of the players at the time that they were there to play soccer very seriously, and that they in fact laid down the foundations of the modern game in the US by actually trying to, and this became a big cliche under David Beckham talking about growing the game, but he was preceded 3 decades earlier by a lot of players from around the world who actually did genuinely come to the US with the goal of making soccer big, and to some extent they succeeded.
Well, love going back to, again, that foreword from Rodney Marsh, a great friend of the show, someone we've had on World Soccer Talk Radio before, where he really makes a big point of that, where he talks about that, hey, you know, I remember the rivalries that we had as players, that it was rivalries between players that really built up the team rivalries. Talk a little bit about that, and in this entire book, I know there's so much more about that, but the rivalries that developed and how seriously these dudes actually took the games, and whether or not they were partying a bunch or whatever, you know, in that regard, how serious they actually took this stuff.
Yeah, well, they were professionals, and if you've ever played soccer with anyone who's been remotely good, you'll know how seriously people take it, even down to the amateur level. No matter how much philosophically you try to distance yourself from it, just being a sport or a game, once you're actually involved in the game, then you really take it seriously. So when you're talking about the level of players like Marsh and Pelé, then naturally, no matter what their incentives for originally going to the States were, once they got out onto the pitch, they wanted to win. And Rodney Marsh and Pelé were a very good example. They kind of respected each other off the field, but they really went at each other in what turned out to be a really good rivalry between the Tampa Bay Rowdies and the New York Cosmos, which definitely evolved primarily around those two players because they were such personalities and because they were, to some extent, there to showboat their talents a little bit. But they had some great games. I mean, the Rowdies beat the Cosmos 5-1 in a very famous game in 1976 when there was a crowd of 40,000 and a national TV audience. And that of course, riled the Cosmos no end because they didn't like losing at all. And so that turned into a seesaw rivalry that lasted for several years and made for great soccer to watch. If you disregard the whole razzmatazz of the NASL, you were still left with what was a very recognizable form of soccer and a very entertaining one as well.
Ian, I want to read this great quote here from Phil Woosnam, the North American Soccer League commissioner from 1977. "This sport will take off. There is absolutely no way that it will not bypass everything else. This country will be the center of world soccer. In the 80s, there will be a mania for the game here. There will be 3 to 5 million kids playing it. The North American Soccer League will be the world's number one soccer league, and it will be the biggest sports league in the USA." And I love the first thing that you say is, "No one ever accused this man of lacking optimism." When you look back on that quote, I mean, what goes through your mind? And if you can kind of tie it back to the modern day here in 2015.
Well, he was a visionary, no doubt about that. And as you say, a huge optimist. And I'm sure even here he realized that you know, maybe he was being over the top. But he was a Welshman in America trying to sell the game. And I think that he understood very early on that was the most important thing in America, was to sell this game. He was starting from scratch. And I think he put the fear up the major league sports in America. And he also made the European game quite scared as well. The people in Europe tend to be very patronizing and dismissive of soccer in America, still to this day. Unfortunately, there's a lot of that around. But at the time, a lot of British clubs especially took note of the way that the Americans were marketing the game and making it, bringing it to a whole new audience, bringing it to children, bringing it to women, and trying to make it a less grim sport than it was in Britain in the 1970s when bad tactics and hooliganism were kind of the order of the day. So, it's easy, of course, to laugh at Phil Woosnam's quote now, and I didn't really put that in the book as a way something to laugh at in retrospect. I really wanted that quote to show this is what actually the commissioner of this league believed was possible. And really at the time, it was possible. And maybe in the long run, it could still, to some extent, come true.
Now, Ian, in the next segment, I want to talk with you about how the old North American Soccer League relates to modern day Major League Soccer. And what a lot of people look at is the MLS mindset of wanting to completely distance itself from the original North American Soccer League. So we'll talk all about that here in a few minutes. But before we head to break here, I want to ask you, because you touched on something there, and again, going back, you know, you're originally from England, you lived in the States for a long time, now you're in Germany, and so you know various footballing cultures, mm-hmm. whether it's in England or Germany, because you think about Franz Beckenbauer, you think about Bobby Moore, Rodney Marsh, Pele, these players that were a part of this league. What type of legacy does the original NASL and their teams have in modern-day Europe among, say, average soccer fans?
Well, I don't think it's one that any soccer fans would admit, but I think if you look at what soccer was in the 70s in the US, it was all-seater stadiums with perfect sight lines. It was the game's major world stars all playing together in one league, and that was something absolutely unprecedented. There were foreign players certainly playing in some leagues, but there was nothing on this scale of deliberately attracting the big stars. Now, what the Champions League and the Premier League and La Liga have all been aimed at in the last 20 years is to create a league in many ways almost identical to the North American Soccer League, which I think in many ways, unwittingly perhaps, was two or three decades ahead of its time. That's for me is the legacy of the NASL.
Ian Plenderleith, the author of Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League, is with us right here on World Soccer Talk Radio. And as promised, when we get back, we're going to talk about the Major League Soccer mindset. Do you think out there, you as the listener, do you feel that MLS wants to completely distance itself from the original North American Soccer League? I certainly do. But what we're going to talk about with Ian is if that mindset may change over the next few years with the popularity of this book, with the popularity of the once-in-a-lifetime documentary about the New York Cosmos. Will the time come where people will actually focus on the positives of the North American Soccer League? Because as this book states many times, there were way too many positives to ignore and label it all as bad. Ian Plenderleith with us right here on World Soccer Talk Radio. We're back after this.
The world's best matches live wherever you are with Fox Soccer to Go. Watch select live matches on your smartphone, on your tablet, and on your computer. Get the app, get the games, and get your fix. Live soccer and more, anytime, anywhere.
Sign up to watch the Bundesliga and Champions League at soccerondish.com.
Your season-long fantasy football team may be going strong, but you don't have to wait until Week 16 to get paid. Put your fantasy skills to the test every week this season at DraftKings.com, America's favorite one-week fantasy football site. One-week fantasy means no season-long commitments. Got an injured player? No problem. It's like a new season every week, so you're never stuck with the same players. And get this, DraftKings is crowning a new millionaire every week this season. You could turn your love of football into a life-changing payday. Just pick your players, pile up the points, and pick up your cash. That's it. You've never experienced football like this before. This isn't fantasy as usual. This is DraftKings. Welcome to the big time. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use promo code ATTACK to play for free for a shot at $1 million in this week's Millionaire Maker event. Enter ATTACK for free entry now, only at DraftKings.com. DraftKings.com. That's DraftKings.com.
If you're a soccer fan and you want to cut the cord and watch more of the beautiful game, NGSN may be the online streaming service you're looking for. FreeSoccerTrial.com. With NGSN, you get live, legal, and on-demand access to matches from the Eredivisie, J-League from Japan, K-League from Korea, Argentina's Primera Division, Portugal, Ecuador, Russian Premier League, as well as leagues from Bolivia, Venezuela, and more. The games are in HD, and commentaries are available in your choice of English or Spanish. And this is a completely new and legal way to watch soccer games in the US. Try it, and I think you'll be impressed. All you have to do is go to freesoccertrial.com and sign up today for your free 30-day trial to NGSN. Again, that's freesoccertrial.com. freesoccertrial.com. Cheers.
Tonight on NBC, their voice returns with the blind auditions.
All right, I just want to say that watching Blake and Adam battle over artists is easily one of the most entertaining things on television.
I know, that's your favorite thing. Then it's the premiere of Blindspot.
Wait, you got to hear what the critics are saying.
Okay.
Blindspot is the smartest new show on television and is poised to become the next Blacklist.
Ooh.
Translation, sit down and I'll watch this show.
It looks amazing. Blindspot premieres after the blind auditions on an all-new voice tonight.
On NBC. I mean, come on, where else would it be?
World Soccer Talk Radio back here with you on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Ian Plenderleith is with us in this edition of the show, talking all about his new book, Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League. Check this book out. I absolutely love it. Now, Major League Soccer, in my opinion at least, continues to, in various ways, distance itself from the original North American Soccer League because, and again, this is just my opinion, it seems as if they don't want to be associated with what ultimately became a failed league, a quote-unquote failed league. Now, again, in this book, there's so many references to hey, yeah, this thing ultimately was you could label as a failure, but my God, there were so many positives within this thing that we need to not ignore all those positives. In your opinion, Ian, are there lessons that Major League Soccer could take as positives from the original NASL that could help the league prosper here in the modern day United States?
I'm not sure if that's necessary the question that needs to be asked here. I think it's more to do with how the MLS perceived itself at the time that it was formed. And I think it was quite understandable in a way that it distanced itself from the NASL, which was still relatively recent at that time. It was still fresh in people's memories. It refused to take on any of the teams from the NASL. It refused to take on any of the staff who'd been involved with the NASL. That might have been a benefit. The wisdom of somebody like Clive Toy might well have been a help to MLS at the start. I don't think that I maybe think you're being a little harsh on MLS now and its attitude to the NASL. I think now it just tends to ignore it rather than to dismiss it. But certainly when it brought in the teams in Canada and the teams in the Pacific Northwest, who were all the Sounders, the Timbers, and the Vancouver Whitecaps, all being successful NASL teams, and these teams still had a fan base and a culture and a rivalry from that time, which was brought ready-made into MLS and in a way really helped to improve and support the league at a time when it was maybe in need of a big boost. The other thing I look at in the book is, well, should MLS have taken on the New York Cosmos at any time? And again, this was understandable that it didn't want to have a team in who I guess would have wrecked the whole ethos of MLS, which was to try and create a league on an equal footing and not have one team that dominated completely as the Cosmos did in many respects the NASL. So to get back to your question, which was what is the legacy of the NASL for MLS? I think that for the modern game in America, they're taking some aspects of the NASL now. For example, the signing of big name players. We've seen Lampard, Gerrard, and obviously Thierry Henry and David Beckham in the past coming into MLS, and I'm skeptical about whether that's a good move or not. It certainly makes for good headlines. It makes for lots of publicity. I'm sure it helps them sell TV rights around the world as well. Whether that's good for the long-term development of U.S. soccer and U.S. soccer players, I think we'll have to wait and see.
Now, with the popularity, we talked about this in the last segment, the once-in-a-lifetime documentary that came out about the New York Cosmos and this new book. I see something shifting here in terms of the way people are going to look back on and remember the North American Soccer League rather than, pigeonholing it as a failure. I mean, do you see that maybe trending in that direction now that we're far enough removed from this where we can actually really look back at the NASL and focus on all of the just amazing positives that you focus on in the book?
I really hope so, Nate, because I think it deserves a much better place in history than it's been given so far. Everybody, it's been a sort of a laughingstock of a league in several ways because people, as you say, it's a failure. Americans don't really have much truck with failures. It was a failure, especially from a business point of view. But I think that American soccer doesn't lack a history, but it lacks a history that people have been able to look on with some pride. It's been a very fragmented history. It's been a history of failed leagues, broken leagues, personalities falling out with each other, different interests and different organizations clashing. And I think if you look at the NASL, it was the first coast-to-coast national league. And for a while, it was really something special, and it was really a threat to established major league sports in the U.S. and to the world game as well. In one of the chapters, I detail all the disputes that the NASL had with FIFA, and that definitely was something in many ways that the NASL can be proud of. They wanted to innovate in terms of points. They wanted more goals. They wanted more substitutes. They had names and numbers on shirts. They wanted to change the offside law with a different line for the offside trap, because they could see that that was a very negative influence on the game. So these are all things that in the long term, it certainly prompted a rethink in the world game, and in some respects prompted actual changes that came to pass sometimes several years later. Even if you look at things like back passing to the goalkeeper, that was something that the NASL brought up and said, well, this is a waste of time. Like, the guy passes the ball back to the keeper, holds it in his hands, he bounces it for 10 seconds. It was and you look at it now, like, how did it take so long to change? You look at the substitute rules. The NASL wanted three substitutes, and they got that for a while because they said, why not? What's it to stop us having three substitutes? What if three players get injured? A lot of the things they looked at made sense just from a purely playing point of view, even if the business model was somewhat shaky.
Well, what you just talked about right there is a microcosm of so much within this book, because, again, you could focus on some of the things that a few people around NASL tried to accomplish. Like you talk about the book, the designated number nine player who would have the ability to punch the soccer ball at any time. You could focus on that, or you could focus on, hey, they were actually many of these heads are groundbreaking when it came to three substitutes, when it came to eliminating the ridiculous passing back to the goalkeeper, and how old Italian teams used to win European competitions all the time. I mean, all these different things that actually were incredibly groundbreaking for world soccer, and they came from the North American Soccer League. And in interviews with people for this book, what were some of the other most revealing and enlightening details that you discovered, especially in relation to outside the box thinking with soccer?
Yeah, well, a lot of people loved a lot of the players loved the 35-yard shootouts to settle game. They said, as a way of settling game, it's much more exciting for the crowd than penalty kicks, and it's a much fairer challenge. You maybe have a 40 to 50% chance of scoring, whereas in a penalty kick, the odds are probably nearer to 80 to 90%. So there was quite a bit of love, mixed love, I'd say, for the 35-yard offside line. If you watch some of the games now, it definitely looks like the play is stretched out. And I think that was something that was needed at the time in the 1970s. Offside is definitely not so much an issue nowadays. I think teams have tactically adapted to that, and we don't see the dreaded offside trap that we used to see so much in the 70s and 80s, and games ruined by lines of defenders choreographed moving up with their arms in the air. But I think the very fact that the NASL took a different approach to offside made people think, well, maybe there is something that needs to be done about this, and another way of looking at it, though. That was more like a natural evolution, I think, in the end, that eliminated offside as a blight on our game. But yes, there were just so many things like that. I mean, you talk to goalkeepers. The goalkeepers, of course, most of the goalkeepers loved the shootouts because they had a much better chance of glory, because they had a much better chance of stopping the ball. But even some of the players said you'd get a bad game, a 0-0 game, 1-1 game, and then all of a sudden the crowd would come to life when the shootouts started. Now, again, these were for league games, so our natural snobby Europeanism would say, well, a draw is a draw. On the other hand, these were teams trying to get people into stadiums, trying to make it interesting, trying to sell them a new game and a new sport. So why not? Why have your spectators leave the stadium not knowing who won or lost? I mean, where is the fun in that? And I think fun is actually another a very key word for the NASL, because football, soccer in Britain in the 1970s, I can tell it was not a lot of fun. It was certainly cheap to get into, but there was the overwhelming threat of violence, a lot of ground. The stadiums were in terrible condition. The fields were in terrible condition. And the game was very complacent. It seemed to think that it could rely on its 100 years of tradition and history to bring it through. But at the time, it was really necessary for a rethink. And I really think that the NASL gave the game a huge kick in the arse, that even if the league did not survive itself, it gave a lot of clubs abroad, who came to play against Cosmos, who came to tour the US during the NASL eras, gave them a lot of food for thought about how they were approaching the game back home and getting people into stadiums.
You know, Ian, that was one of my favorite aspects of this book, is that we talk all about the legacy of the NASL and how it relates to modern day Major League Soccer, how it relates to modern day soccer in America. Let's take a step back, and obviously you did this in this book extensively. Take a step back and look at the legacy of the North American Soccer League on a world level, because it's there. And I love the way you talk about giving the game a kick in the ass and these stubborn mindsets that were changed very much by these sights and sounds of rock and roll soccer. And when these people came over from abroad and saw what was going on here, and they went, okay, maybe there are a few things that we can take back home, a few little inspirations that we can take back home from this crazy North American soccer league, and we shouldn't just label it all as one thing. I love it. Ian Plenderleith with us right here on World Soccer Talk Radio, talking more about rock and roll soccer on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
For over 75 years, GEICO's been about consistency, as in we've consistently helped people save money on their car insurance. And to prove it, we'll air one of our first radio commercials from over 75 years ago.
At GEICO, we're all about consistency, as in we consistently help people save money on their car insurance. To prove it, you can call GEICO. Call us today, call us tomorrow, call us 75 years from now.
That was way more consistent than I expected.
GEICO, saving people money for over 75 years.
The following was recorded at a Burger King drive-thru at breakfast.
Morning, welcome to Burger King.
Can I get a sausage, egg, and cheese croissant sandwich?
Sure can. Right now they're 2 for $4, but could you say that word again?
Croissant sandwich?
Oh, where I'm from we say croissant sandwich!
Wow. Where are you from?
From behind this counter?
Piled high with thick-cut bacon or savory sausage, fluffy eggs, and melted cheese. Get 2 croissant sandwich breakfast sandwiches for just $4, only at Burger King. Limited time only. Price and participation vary.
Hi, Rick Tittle here. You may know me as the sports talk host that can talk about all sports. Football, basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, tennis, auto racing, boxing, Olympics, rollerball. But this time I'm here to talk about pain. If you have pain in your knee or your back like I do, then you should know about the Health Alert Hotline. If Medicare is your primary insurance, then you could qualify for a back or knee brace at little or no charge. I have an old injury from my football playing days, and anything that can help take that pain away and make it more manageable, that has my attention. I love the free delivery, and they take care of the paperwork for you. So if you have Medicare and need help for back, ankle, knee, or shoulder pain, please call the Health Alert Hotline at 800-428-1570. That's 800-428-1570. Agents are standing by 24/7, so go ahead and call now, 800-428-1570.
The experts at Web.com want to build your business a successful website for free, just like they did for these Web.com customers.
We've used and looked at other website designers, but there's nobody better than Web.com.
Web.com can have your website built for free and up and running in as little as 7 days. Plus, promote your site on all the major search engines like Google, Yahoo, and Bing.
If you're in business today and you don't have a web presence, you won't be taken seriously.
Call now to get your website built for free. If after 30 days you're happy with your new website, we'll continue to provide promotion, hosting, support, and maintenance, all for just one low monthly fee. If not, cancel and pay nothing. Call 855-254-SITE, 855-254-SITE. 855-254-7483 or go to web.com/radio. There is no upfront charge for building the website, after which the ongoing fee applies. Rights to the website are relinquished upon cancellation unless otherwise purchased.
Oh my goodness, we are back. We're live. All right, World Soccer Talk Radio, Sports by Life Broadcasting Network. My name is Nate Amarea, joined by Ian Plenderleith, the author of Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League. If only you could hear the conversations during the breaks. Oh, they are sometimes quite good. Hey, let's talk about now, Ian, the in-stadium atmospheres. We've touched on this a little bit already, but I want to elaborate on this and really paint the picture of the grounds. And whether it's the Meadowlands for a big, you know, ginormous New York Cosmos crowd, or a crowd in Minnesota or the old Tampa Bay Rowdies or in Los Angeles or the Pacific Northwest, take your pick. I mean, maybe even we'll talk about a few of these, but talk about the attendance numbers and really what the atmospheres were like in these grounds in the old North American Soccer League during the rock and roll soccer era.
Well, when they were good, they were good. Of course, there were, of course, the teams we maybe want to touch on very briefly who were playing in massive NFL stadiums and only attracting 2,000 or 3,000 people in New England, for example, and in Denver. There was a franchise in the 70s that actually moved to Minnesota because they were rattling around in a huge stadium. On the positive side, of course, what really kicked off in the 70s was the tradition of tailgating. And I think this particularly kicked off at the Rowdies, at the Minnesota Kicks, and at the Meadowlands. And it seemed to me it did come from a little bit from the NFL, but because soccer was a summer sport, especially summer like Minnesota, which had to get through a cold winter, it suddenly became the place to be for young people to hang out outside before the game. It became as much as an occasion as a sort of pre-rave party involving, you know, a certain amount of recreational drugs, a lot of drinking. I think a lot of people talked about Minnesota about the fact young people were making out in the parking lot before the game and during the game and after the game. So it was definitely there was a period there where it was a really carnivalesque atmosphere, and that's not even talking about before you get in the stadium when you started with the marketing and the gimmickry and some of the things that the clubs seem to be on an endless quest to come up with new ways to get the crowd going before the game and at halftime, and you know there were different ways of bringing teams into stadiums on the back of a fire engine or on the back of an elephant. I think it was one team they all rode in on Harley Davidson motorcycles, and the crowds loved that kind of stuff. And I think that a lot of the players they talked to were like, well, you know, we went along with it, we knew we had to do it, and there was a certain bemused resignation to the fact that when they came to America, that was part of the way they had to sell it. But because when they're looking back on it, they love it as well, as you do when you look back nostalgically on anything like that. As I mentioned before, you know, the action on the field, whether it was the penalty shootouts or whether it was George Chinaglia scoring three goals, the crowds could get really animated and excited. And a lot of the players talked about the different kind of atmosphere they experienced in a U.S. stadium compared with hostile stadiums in Europe. Now, both have their own kinds of atmosphere. And I think in Europe, what a lot of the players wanted to escape from was this kind of this whole thing is like a matter of life and death, like the threats from the crowd and the violence between fans. Whereas in the US, they came and it was more of a day out. Certainly, it was from a European point of view, it was more tame and maybe even timid. But for a lot of players, it was great. I could bring my family to the game now, and I didn't have to worry about their safety. And nobody got on your back because not everybody really understood what was going on the field anyway. So if you made a mistake, you didn't suddenly have 30,000 people yelling down at you that you you deserve to be taken off the pitch and off the field and flogged and hung for it. So the atmosphere was something that a lot of players brought up because it was a really refreshing change for them to be able to play in front of crowds that were actually enjoying the spectacle before them.
And what were some of the numbers like, Ian, as far as places like Minnesota? We've heard stories on the show about the Cosmos playing in front of over 70,000 people. But apart from the Cosmos, what were some of the numbers like in places like Minnesota and Tampa Bay?
Minnesota, they ramped up their crowds really, really quickly. Within weeks of starting, they were starting to they started off well. They had a huge marketing coup in their first game in that they underestimated the number of people who were coming, and so they ended up opening the gates and letting people in for free. And they won their first few games, I think, and then all of a sudden the Cosmos came to town, and they were playing in the Met. stadium in Bloomington, and the next thing they knew, they had 46,000 fans there for the Cosmos. And they didn't get that every week, but for the playoff games at the end of the season, a lot, I think for games against Tulsa, which also developed into a huge rivalry, they would start to get healthy crowds of 30,000 or more, and often in 40,000 as well. The Rowdies, too, had some very good attendances. And I think, and then up in the Pacific Northwest again, especially when the teams are playing against each other, you would get 30 regular crowds of 30 to 40,000 in those games as well. So obviously, you took the average attendances that were the failing or flailing franchises, which brought in much smaller crowds and which brought the average attendance down. But in certain markets, there was a huge interest and a real fervor for these teams, which made them something very special, and which a lot of fans still remember today. I remember when I went to interview Alan Merrick, who's still living up in Minnesota, like a lot of former Minnesota Kicks players, and he was still getting fan mail, you know, 30, 40 years later, people sending him Minnesota shirts to be signed, and I was very taken by that and quite amazed that kind of legacy is still living on in places like that. And these players, they came over, a lot of them came over from Europe, came from South America, and they went out there, they sold this game the hard way by going into high schools and doing clinics day after day. They really, really put a lot of work into it outside of their own careers. And a lot of them ended up staying on and doing their own. A lot of them played indoor league, but a lot of them also set up coaching schools, which are still going today. I talked to Tony Glavin, who played for the Philadelphia Fury for 3 years, and he is still running a coaching school in St. Louis. And there's so many players who ended up staying on because they loved it. They loved the U.S. and they loved it's the freedom it offered them compared with the United Kingdom. And again, this is another legacy of the NASL, that it really formed in places like Dallas and Atlanta and in California, in New Jersey. These are all areas that grew massive youth soccer cultures on the back of the hard work that the NASL players put in back at that time.
Ian, during the last break, you were sharing with me some of the more colorful interviews that you got to conduct in the creation of this book. Would you care to share a few of those with the listeners right now? Some of the more entertaining and revealing interviews that you had for this book.
Sure. There's one former Cosmos player, Bob Yarushki, who gave me a very entertaining interview. And the story, which I recount in full in the book of how he came to sign for the New York Cosmos, I still love to reread that, and I just laugh again and again every time I read it, because he starts out completely pissed off that he's been sold to the Cosmos without his consent, without even knowing anything about it, and then he describes how he'd previously been on a salary of $5,600 a year, and he gets flown to New York, and how he is feted and treated there as a star. Just the way this story unfolds is very, very funny indeed, and the way he told it in person was even funnier. It kind of embarrasses me to listen to the tape, because all you can hear is the sound of me laughing in the background. And another interview I hugely enjoyed was with the revered soccer journalist Paul Gardner, my compatriot who lives in New York. I went to New York to interview Paul, and we talked for hours and hours. And he's one of these guys who never says anything that's less than super interesting. He just has views on everything, and they're usually very entertaining views as well as being very well thought out views. He's sometimes very trenchant on certain matters. He seems to have a thing against goalkeepers for some reason, and he has one or two issues with certain aspects of the game that we all have, certain particular points that we feel very strongly about. But Paul was a huge pleasure to interview, and he comes across in the book as a little bit of an anti-voice, a counter-voice to my own sometimes almost schoolboyish enthusiasm for the NASL. And I would make a point in an interview, and he would tell me in no uncertain language what he thought of my take on that, which again is very entertaining to listen when you play it back on the tape recorder. But Paul was great value, and but as I said to you, the book was made by the people who talk to me, really, the number of players and coaches, journalists, administrators like Clive Toy, who were prepared to give me their time, and they really molded the book, and it took shape. The more I talked to more people, the more the book took shape and got away from this original idea I had of, you know, sex and glamour and cheerleaders, and turned it into a proper analysis of a very important time in U.S. soccer history.
While still incorporating sex and cheerleaders and all of that good stuff, absolutely. Hey, we got 3.5 minutes left here with you, Ian, and we talked about this actually between ourselves during the last break, and so I want to share this with the listeners and get your thoughts on this. We had JP Della Camera on the show a couple months ago. We also had, about a week after JP, Seamus Mallon. Was on the show, and those men both have great connections with the old North American Soccer League, and both JP and Seamus said in different ways, it wasn't the exact same quote, but basically said the same thing, that if there were lucrative television deals in the 1970s like we have in today's age, that the NASL could have gone on and continued to prosper, that the lucrative TV deals were the biggest thing. And you referenced Phil Woosnam, the old commissioner's attitude towards these TV deals. What are your thoughts on that? That could have been something that would have not only saved the NASL, but kept it going for years.
Well, the Seamus and JP are absolutely right on that. I completely agree with them. If you imagine now a league that had Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, Wayne Rooney, Thomas Müller, Schweinsteiger, you name top 10 world stars all playing in one league. Imagine how much you would sell the TV rights for to that league. That would be phenomenal. It would be, we would all be probably watching it for better or worse every weekend. So again, this is another reason why the NASL was a league a little bit too before its time, because in the 1970s, of course, there was no such thing as satellite TV. You couldn't broadcast the NASL live around the world, and they couldn't even get a good network deal across the US. And now everybody says if the cable TV had come in just a few years earlier, then the NASL would have survived. It would have been able to negotiate local deals in much the same way MLS did in its early years, and they would have been able to sell good packages to their local TV markets rather than trying to get people in Miami interested in a game that was happening in San Jose. So certainly, yes, if the time had been right for that kind of TV deal, that would have been naturally been a huge help to the NASL, and that would have brought in the money that it needed, that its franchises needed to survive. As it was, they kind of followed the Cosmos model of trying to bring in expensive stars from abroad, and everybody went on a kind of chase in one go to outspend each other, and it was just absolutely untenable. They were selling cheap tickets to get people in, but they were overspending on players at the same time, and there were just too many teams brought into the league in one go in the late 70s. They were just overstretched too quickly, and that was what had caused its downfall.
So, Ian, Amazon.com and good and bad bookshops all across the states. Anywhere else that folks can go to get this fantastic book?
Well, if go to your, I presume it's on BarnesandNoble.com as well. If you go to your local bookshop and order it, it's published by St. Martin's Press, which is a huge publishing house, and that is one reason I would like to exhort people to buy it, because it's very rare for a big U.S. publisher to publish a soccer book. So they're taking something of a risk, which I really appreciate. And if it works out well, then maybe other publishers would be prepared to publish soccer books in the future.
Well, I certainly hope so. This one is fantastic. Rock and Roll Soccer, the Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League. Ian Plenderleath, you're welcome back on the show anytime, mate. Thank you so much for joining us, and best of luck spreading this book to the world.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, that was Ian Plenderleath. We're back after this. Take the express train home. World Soccer Talk Radio, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
Are you an inventor who would like to try to have an invention or idea patented and submitted to companies? But you don't know what to do next? Call for free information from InventHelp. InventHelp, a leading inventor service company, has been helping inventors since 1984 and has sales offices located in more than 60 cities nationwide. You'll want to talk to the company that has helped secure more than 7,000 invention patents. So call InventHelp. Even if you have an idea for improving an existing product and don't know where to go with it, you'll still want to call InventHelp for free information. You'll find out how InventHelp may assist you in trying to patent your invention and submit it to companies. So call now.
Call InventHelp at 1-800-316-1738. That's 1-800-316-1738. Get your free information by dialing 1-800-316-1738. That's 1-800-316-1738. 1-800-316-1738.
When you struggle with credit card bills every month, you're not just in debt. Debt is all around you.
I see people every day that are on the brink. They're going to go over the edge, and at the bottom is bankruptcy, and we pull them back.
At the Debt Helpline, we're experts at helping you resolve your debt problems and become free of debt. We can help you pay off your debt and give you one lower monthly payment that you can afford.
You do get to consolidate your payments. You only have to worry about making one payment a month instead of making three or four or five.
If you have $5,000, $10,000 or more in credit card bills, call the Debt Helpline now for a free confidential debt analysis.
800-957-6063. 800-957-6063. Call the CESI Debt Helpline right now for a free, confidential debt review. 800-957-6063. 800-957-6063.
Today, investors need to secure and protect their life savings. With government spending out of control, they continue to print money to cover the ever-increasing debt, which decreases the value of the dollar and promotes inflation. American Bullion offers a hassle-free opportunity to transfer any portion of your existing IRA or previous 401k to a gold IRA for your protection. Take advantage of the lower gold prices today and enjoy the long-term security and hedge against inflation that gold and silver can provide in an IRA. Thousands of others have trusted American Bullion to transfer their IRAs into gold, and you can too. Call American Bullion today and discover the stability, protection, and peace of mind that a gold IRA can bring. Call American Bullion today at 800-576-1046 for a free consultation and receive their free IRA rollover guide, which offers the best information on gold IRAs. Keep your life savings safe and sound when you can. Call 800-576-1046. That's 800-576-1046 for your free gold IRA guide.
World Soccer Talk Radio here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network, taking the express train home. Another huge thank you to Ian Plenderleith. What a book, Rock and Roll Soccer, The Short Life and Fast Times of the North American Soccer League. And I love it, Ian, before we let him go, he's asking me, hey, did you get the hard copy? Did you get the good updated hard copy that's being sold in the States? I said, absolutely. He is very proud of how this thing came out. And I will tell you right now, the cover of this book, it's like it kind of gives you a feel of what the inside is going to be like. The colors on the front of this thing, the shot of George Best pulling up his jersey, the shot of Pele with an overhead kick, the bright orange LA Aztecs track suits. I mean, this is beautiful. Rock and roll soccer, it's what it's all about. And again, it's about more than the sex, drugs, and rock and roll and the cheerleaders and the AstroTurf and the crazy uniforms. There was some brilliant, brilliant soccer being played. And let's take a second and think about the legacy of this league, the old North American Soccer League, not only here in the USA, but around the world. That was a real fun show. Another huge thank you to Ian Plenderleith. Thanks to the engineers. Thanks to the gaffer. My name's Nate Avarea. Signing off. Bye for now.